And I welcome all of you back once again for the 319th installment of the Parish of the Patriots show. I know most of you are return members, and I appreciate the fact that you choose to come back week in and week out. Here's a little curious thing. According to, you know, the tracking, the data, the statistics for Radio Albion, I'm actually getting more people listen to the Daily Nationalist show on Mondays than listen to this show. I find that curious. But anyway, nevertheless, I'm glad you're here. If you are new here, I hope you'll stay for the whole show. We do have a Christian-specific segment. You see, there is something to the religious tone of the title of the show. We do that. That is, I keep it more or less separate. Sometimes there's a little overlapping. But I do keep that kind of segregated to itself. I think it's the better way, the more proper way to structure the show. And I have every intention of continuing to do that. It'll be roughly the halfway point of the show. I do encourage you to listen. You may sit there and think that, you know, that ain't your cup of tea. And you do have the option of noping out of that if you want. But I encourage you to at least give it a shot one time. I think pretty much everybody who is a return member, which is most of you, return member of the congregation, return listener, you stay. That's probably the reason why you stay and you listen to it. But nevertheless, if you are new, I hope you will give that a shot. If you do get something out of the show, don't be shy. Pay those tithes. We do snail mail. That's it. Ignore the crypto addresses I know, you know, that are up on Radio Albion. Those aren't mine. Those are Sven's. He put those before he left. I don't have access to it. I don't have any of that. I have snail mail. That's it. I sound like I beat a dead horse because I mention that every week. And I myself think, you know, you don't need to point that out. But you'd be surprised how often I will get an email and somebody be like, I love your show. I'd love to send a donation. What can I do? This, I know it's hard to believe, but this is literally it. You're going to have to put something in. You're going to have to put something into an envelope. And before we get off into the listener supported mailbag, because I'm liable to get to rambling and forget to bring it up, I am in regular contact with Sven, and because I'm the world's worst at not updating y'all on how he's doing. And before it can slip my mind again, I can't get into any details of, you know, particulars of what he's going through, because that can only potentially make things more difficult. I mean, he's doing fine. I mean, he's having to go through things that I personally find somewhat ridiculous. That's just my opinion. You know, and I'll leave it at that. He's in the UK, so I think pretty much all of you understand where I'm coming from. You know the nature of why he's going through what he's going through. But he's doing all right. I mean, he really is. He's fan. He gets along with the people that are around him. You know, he's doing fine. I just looking forward to the day when he gets past, or when he truly gets all of this behind him, and, you know, can get on with his life. To be this close and the frustration, I mean, it is for me, and I'm not even the one going through it beyond sitting here keeping the lights on at Radio Albion in his absence. So let's get into this listener supporter mailbag. Tony, I appreciate it. I want to let you know I got it. No note in here, but that's fine. I did want to let you know because, you know, this is confirmation. And the ultimate privacy coin of the snail mail. GPD, I'm trying to get me some of that lovely USAID money. No luck as of yet, but here's something for the plate anyway. Cheers. That's from Peter. Thank you. That really, you know, so many people, you know, myself included, you know, we'll talk about how everything here in clown world is fake and gay. But we don't really, I think we really don't understand how fake it is. I saw a deal here recently where, you know, oh, all of these groups are out there protesting, you know, against Donald Trump, Elon Musk. And of course, you know, it's always like, you know, oh, this was organized by, you know, these groups. And I'm thinking, well, of course they're protesting because they're worried they're going to miss out their money. You find out how all these media outfits, you know, they were getting the stolen. Well, I refer to it as stolen money because, you know, come on, they had to hide it. You know, the Indian scammers, if you fall for one of their Indian scams, aren't going to tell you the truth of what they're doing up front. They try to deceive you. They try to cover up where that money's really going because you're being scammed. Is scamming not a crime? Is it not a form of theft? And you look at all these USAID and all of the rest of it, and that's just the tip of the iceberg. It's all a scam. I find it interesting when the scams come to light. You know, like I said, USAID is just this little, this just a tiny part of it, and they're talking huge numbers. How much do you think is scammed through the Defense Department? People make jokes. They're like, oh, the U.S. military is this big, mighty, the most powerful military on the face of the planet, and they struggle against the Taliban. They struggle against the Houthis. And they don't understand. No, they're the most expensive military on the face of the planet because it's a money scam. These defense contracts, this is all a scam. These groups, you know, these media people. One thing I thought about that, talking about the USAID thing, you know, for years, these media people would stand up there, you'd read these articles or you'd see on TV and they'd be like, you know, oh, well, you know, such and such evening news or the such and such post or whatever, you know, it loses money for the company that owns it. It loses money. But you see, the owners of the owners of the newspaper, the owners of the media outlet, they believe that is such an important, integral part of our democracy, way of life, of who we are, that even though they're losing money supporting their wonderful journalists, they are willing to make this sacrifice. They're willing to throw money away into, you know, a sinkhole of journalistic integrity. Because, you see, this is a fundamental part of the American way. The free press, the American democracy cannot survive without the integrity of our journalists, who cannot be burdened with things like profit, money. They are above greed. So they make the sacrifice and throw their own money into this sinkhole of journalism. And now we know that's all bullshit. They were just getting government money. They were getting, it's a scam. They weren't losing money. They weren't standing up for journalistic integrity at all, even though they weren't making, they were making money. For years we've heard, oh, George Soros this, George Soros, oh, he's the billionaire liberal. He's the billionaire. He funds these leftist groups with his billions of dollars. No, he's not. No, he's not. He's just able to get into the government scam. He's funding them with your money that they steal from you every year about this time. Actually, specifically today, it's April 15th. It's tax day here in the U.S. George Soros ain't funding nothing. He's a middleman. He's part of the scam. They take the money. It doesn't matter. He's spending his money. He's spending your money that they take from you. Under the threat of extreme violence, which being April 15th. We'll get into that here. I'm not going to keep going on. No USAID money for Radio Albion. I can guarantee you that. Finally, we got Triangle Whip. GPD, what is worse, libtards or conservatives? Seems both are under the synagogue of Satan. Again, that's from Triangle Whip. Well, you know, you hear that we're all familiar with the term, you know, two sides of the same coin. That's the way I think you view it. As we all know, you know, the left pushes things so far and the conservatives maintain the status quo, which is always moving further to the left. And though people get this defeatist attitude that this is the way it will always be. You know, we're conservative. Whatever the left is pushing for today, 5 years from now, will inevitably become a conservative value. Even though the conservatives will make noise against it today, it will become a conservative value tomorrow, and they will seek to maintain it. Now, what I do find, talking about two sides, same coin, what I do find interesting on that note, and I've talked about that before, is the cultist aspect surrounding Trump. I find it funny that the Trump derangement people, they'll sit there and look at the Trump supporting people, the diehard MAGA faithful, and they'll laugh at them for being cult members, and it just goes right over their heads that they're cult members too, just on the other side of the faction. They can't see anything good. I mean, everything, two sides of the same coin. They're cult members. They just view Donald Trump from a different way, but he's still the center of their universe. Everything's about him, you know. They'll sit there and be outraged that he's, you know, they act like Trump supporting Israel is, you know, this horrible thing. But, you know, when the Democrats were doing the same, they're silent. It's a cultish thing. You wouldn't understand. I hope you wouldn't understand. I don't understand. I get it from an analytical point of view, but I think it's funny. Anyway, that wraps up our listener supporter mailbag. Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you
very much. It is April 15th. It's just tax day. Tax day. That is the deadline to send your money to the IRSS, to the IRS. I think it's funny how, you know, we're given this narrative that the government somehow represents us, you know, that, you know, our democracy value of who we are and all of that. But they have to take our money at gunpoint. And that is the reality. They can fluff us up all they want to about paying our fair share, supporting our democracy value. They'll pick something that they think people support and say, see, you know, if you're regular, run-of-the-mill, conservative type or whatever they talk about, you want to support, you know, you like having good roads. You're supporting roads and infrastructure. You know, they tell the old people you want Medicare and Social Security to keep going, don't you? They got to convince you, like any other scammer, they've got to convince you that you're getting something out of this. But the reality is, in the fact, that if you were truly getting what you wanted out of it, they wouldn't have to threaten you, would they? It would be a voluntary tax. But it's not a voluntary. Oh, they try to act like it is. Funny, if you look at it, it's written in a manner that is somehow voluntary. You know, and you'll have people who, there have been people throughout over the years who will look at this and say, look, technically by law, it's a voluntary tax, so I'm just not going to volunteer to pay it. But see, you have to understand how the word magic works. If you don't volunteer to pay it, then you got to go to prison. If we were getting something out of it, it was truly a voluntary system. If we lived in a representative democracy, republic, or however you want to phrase it, they wouldn't have to force the money out of us. We would all see where our money was going to, think that's a great thing, and we would happily pay it. In other words, our tax system would be like the listener supporter mailbag here at the Parish of the Patriots. You listen to the show, you say, wow, today, Grandpa Dan didn't suck. I really enjoyed the message today. I'm going to put a little something in an envelope. Or on the flip side of that, you may be like, man, I was going to send $5. I was going to send something to this guy. But I'm going to tell you, I listened to the show today and I don't know what planet he is on. Piss on him. I'm not sending anything. It'd be something like that. Somebody goes to church. They put something in the offering plate because they're supporting the church. They want the church to remain. They liked the preacher's message. They think the choir has their boogie-woogie on, whatever their reason. They're getting something out of it, and they put something in the plate. But then nobody's going to kick their ass out of the front door of the church if they don't put something in the offering plate. It's voluntary. And the church manages to continue operating, doesn't it? Unless they're getting USAID money, then they're really getting out there and doing crazy stuff. But we're not going back there. The fact that at the end of the day, You pay your taxes not because you're getting something out of it, not because you believe in what the government does, not because you believe in the democracy values of who we are. You pay your taxes, every single one of us, and I'm being U.S.-centric here, but you can apply this to any nation in the world, any country in the world, basically, I assume. But speaking as an American, we're talking about because it's April 15th, it's tax deadline, the income tax deadline. Then there's all the other taxes that you get to pay along the way. We're not even going to get to that. We're just doing the income tax. And at the end of the day, you pay your taxes for one reason. You and I, we pay our taxes for one reason and one reason only. Because if we don't, they will send people. First, not right off the bat. What you're going to get first is some kind of letter and some kind of notification. But if you ignore them long enough and on a long enough time scale, you're 100% basically guaranteed that at some point they're going to bring men with guns. Now, men with guns come with one reason. The implication is now we're at the point we're going to force you to do something. And if you do not do it, we will shoot you. They're going to take your house away. It doesn't matter. You paid for your house. It has nothing to do with your income tax. They say you owed it. And they're going to take your house. They're going to put you in prison. Again, you're not going to volunteer to go to prison because you didn't pay your fair share, Mr. Voluntary Tax Guy. They're going to put you in prison. And if you do not go, if you refuse to go and resist accordingly, then they will kill you. That's why we pay our taxes. At the end of the day, the reality of it is we pay our taxes because if we don't, men with guns are inevitably at some point going to show up and steal what property we have, probably put us in prison, and hell, if they feel like it, they may kill us. This is why we pay. Let's don't sugarcoat it. Just don't cope with, it's because, you know, they do some good things. That was a reality. They would pass an offering plate around. But they don't do that. Got to go to. They're never going to say you pay your tax. They don't going to talk about you pay your taxes so George Soros can get your money and redistribute it to leftist groups to protest against you. To have riots in the street, whatever. Color revolution in some country you can't find on a map. We pay our taxes because if we don't, they will kill us and steal our stuff. That's it. It's worse than organized crime. It really is. One of the things I found humorous living long enough is the way that the government no longer even masks that it's organized crime. They don't. Back in the day, you know, when there was organized crime, you know, like you think of the mafia, like what you've seen in movies or whatever, you know, in the mob. When you feel like if you watch some old movie and they're talking about, oh, these mobsters involved in everything, you know, they're involved in the, and one of the things they'll say, they're in the numbers racket. And if you're young, you're like, you watch some old movie and they're talking about, oh, yeah, let me tell you, Bugsy over there, they're making a killing in the numbers racket. You know what the numbers racket is? If you watch one of them old movies, it's the lottery. You see, it was the lottery not being run by the government. That was the numbers racket. It was a racket when the mob did it. Now, it's the way we voluntarily fund education. It's an integral part of our budget. The numbers racket. When the mob did it, it was frowned upon because it's exploiting poor people. When the government does it, it's all voluntary. It's good. That money will go to education. They always say that shit too. You know, whatever tax you're talking about, they're always going to say, oh, it's going to education, because that's one of the things they figure is easier to swallow. Whether you're talking about your Social Security money, your Medicare money, whatever they take out, that shit goes in the general budget. That means it just goes in the pot and they spend it. It goes in the account and they spend in that. And you, oh, it's just going to my Social Security. No, it's not. It just goes in the general fund. I have often imagined a system where we had a government that truly represented what the people wanted. And tax day comes around and they say, well, you know, your tax bill is $4,000. I'm just pulling a number out. Your tax bill is $4,000. But when you sit there at your computer and input your $4,000, you can designate where your $4,000 goes. Okay, well, let's see. I want $2,000 to go to infrastructure, roads and bridges. I don't have any kids. I'm not putting any into the education category. I'll put $500 in the defense category. We do need to have an army to protect our country, but I don't think we need to be going around the world playing World Cop. So $500 is plenty for the defense. Let's see here. You know, and you can put this. I put some money in here so that, you know, old people can go to the doctor, whatever. Ain't nobody going to be putting money into you. Oh, is there a category here so all these groups can theft it through USAID and all of these other? No, ain't nobody going to put anything in there. That's why you're not going to ever get the choice. It's funny, isn't it funny how they always talk about our democracy and the people? You see, the government is accountable to the people, and nothing could be further from the truth. How do they I mean, why do they even bother with the lip service anymore? We pay our taxes for the same exact reason as, again, if you watch one of those old movies and the mobsters showed up in your little shop, you know, your little mom and pop store, and said, oh, you got to pay the protection money. The people pay the protection money because they know that it ain't voluntary, you know. Like in them old movies, once in a while, somebody be like, oh, well, I'm not paying for your protection. And they get their windows broke out. See, you didn't, we could do something about that, but you didn't pay the protection money. See, you're not being protected from somebody else. You're being protected from them. So you pay them the protection money. It's the same exact thing here on tax day. We pay them the protection money because we don't want them to come metaphorically break our windows out or our legs or, you know, wind up sleeping with the fishes. You're going to be sleeping with the fishes. We won't be sleeping with the fishes in some federal prison or worse. So we pay the protection money. Heaven forbid you play the numbers racket. I mean, we that's why. It's not because they're giving us something. That's just people trying to justify, feel better about themselves, that they're not being victimized, you know? And that's a victim mentality, isn't it? The victims will sit there and say, well, I'm not really a victim. You see, I pay it because I believe in the system. I pay the mobsters because, you know, if some thugs come around here, they're going to know. I'll be like, hey, I'm paying Bugsy's gang off. You don't want to get in trouble with them. Of course, with the government, they going to side with the thugs. Are you paying the protection money? They ain't going to protect you. The thugs come break your windows out in your little mom and pop store and you go call the Bugsy gang and they're just like, oh, you know, what's wrong with you? Don't you know they've been oppressed? They're allowed to break your windows out. You should be glad you had the opportunity. You got insurance. Don't worry about it. Let them steal all they want to. It would be wrong for the Bugsy gang to come in and break those guys up. They're literally, the government is literally less, there's less integrity there than the Yakuza in Japan. It's an interesting thing. I've read things here and there. You know, I'm not going to pretend to be an expert. Obviously, I'm not. But I read an interesting thing here sometime back, you know, about the way the Yakuza actually functions. It's looked upon people like America. They think it's just like the Japanese version of the mafia because there is some similarities there. Don't get me wrong. But I was reading a deal one time about how they function and they actually do provide protection. They said in some areas that are, you know, definitely, you know, this area is Yakuza. Like if they have, you know, a gang of youths or whatever that are doing vandalism and causing problems in the neighborhood. They said the people there, actually, they don't go to the police. They go to the Yakuza and they're like, hey, you know, these assholes are causing all this problem in our stores and stuff. And the Yakuza handle it. You imagine if you were being a thug in Japan, which is hard to imagine anyway, but you're being a thug in Japan. And hey, you know, you're trying to act all Western and stuff and being bad and all of this. Are you going to want to face against the Japanese police or the Yakuza? Because they're going to send their young guys down there. They're going to kick your ass. So they actually get something out of it. We don't get nothing out of it. We don't get anything out of it. They're going to tell us that we're the problem. Imagine you call the, you're paying the Bugsy gang and you call them because these youths keep coming into your store and trashing your store. And the Bugsy gang comes up and kicks your ass because how dare you criticize these young people? You're the problem. You're like, I'm the one been paying you. You've been telling me I have to pay this protection money. Come on now. And then you show up and threaten to kick my ass. Literally getting nothing out of this. It's just literally theft in your face. Again, I've been very U.S.-centric on this because this is our U.S. day of taxation. But I read these stories from Europe, the U.K., and people can't pay their heating, but they have these ridiculous tax rates. As bad as the taxation here is in the U.S., and in a lot of ways, it's not near. An American will sit here and say, well, it's a lot better than over there in Europe. They're paying these much higher tax rates. But when you look at the amount of tax that's hidden everywhere, it's probably not as far off as people want to believe. But you got people in places like the UK or various countries in Western Europe, and their economies are in a lot of trouble. People are having a lot of problems. They're taxed at a ridiculous rate. And they'll sit there and still, in the midst of this, say, well, we need to allocate even more money to the Ukraine. You can't pay your heating bills. You can't keep the lights on. They're telling you to take a cold shower to stick it to Putler. And they're going to send more billions to the Ukraine. And again, Ukraine is a money scam. They're pocketing the money. The people standing up there going, oh, Ursula von der Leyen or whatever the hell her name is. Baerbock from Germany. All the rest of them. Baerbock from Germany. All of them. If you think that the billions they constantly advocate to go to Ukraine, do you honestly think they're not putting some of that in an account for them? Are you that naive? No, you're not, because you listen to the Parish of the Patriots, so you're not that naive. But the rest of these dumbasses are. It's breathtaking, isn't it? To sit there when they watch some EU asshole politician stand up there and talk about the importance of supporting our democracy in the Ukraine by sending them another kajillion dollars or whatever the hell. Imagine being so naive that you don't believe that there's a bank account somewhere with that person's name on it that's getting a little cut of that. It is all a money scam. And if you complain about it in some of these countries, you're going to go to jail. You're going to get a visit from the Borpes. Now, I just mentioned a moment ago, you know, about how much of our taxation, how they hide it. You look at the way they scam, because here in the U.S., I can't speak for your Euro countries, but, you know, here in the U.S., for the average wagee, they take it out of their checks. They take it out of their check. Every paycheck, the money comes out, and they never see it. You know, I mean, yeah, they could look on their check stub and see how much they're taking out, but that ain't real to them. What's real to a wagee is how much money goes into his bank account. That's what he makes. He doesn't look at all these other lines on there. Not really. It doesn't mean anything. And these same wagees will celebrate this time of the year. You see, I've been all negative on April 15th because that's tax deadline day. The difference between, you know what the difference between, say, April 15th and say February 2nd. I'm just grabbing that as an arbitrary date. You know what the difference is? April 15th is looked at as dread because that's the people that have to pay tax. That's the people who are probably in business for themselves, and that's the deadline. They're going to have to write a check. February 2nd, you see, the wagey, when the first of the year comes around, they're waiting for that W-2 form, because when they get their W-2s, they can't wait to file for their taxes. They're waiting. They're anxiously until, they ain't waiting until April 15th. The wagey is waiting to get there. They can't wait to file their taxes because they get a refund. And they'll get a refund. Say they get a $2,000 refund. They don't think of it as, wow, the government used this money interest-free. Maybe I'm getting screwed here. No, they think they're getting free money from the government. Imagine that. Imagine that this wage is going to work. And before he sees his paycheck, the Bugsy gang shows up. I don't know why I wound up with Bugsy. It just sounded like the most old-timey mafia, 50s movie mafia name I could think of. Before he shows up to get his check, the Bugsy gang shows up and says, "Hey, what's in the envelope?" The Bugsy gang shows up, says, "What's in the envelope?" "Well, this is my employee's pay. I pay him, and you know, here's his $500. And the Bugsy gang opens that envelope up and pulls a $100 bill out and says, "That's our part," and they hand it back. And the store owner then turns around when the employee shows up and says, "Here's your $400. This happens every week. And then at the first of the year, the Bugsy gang shows up to the employee and says, "Hey, I got a little something for you," and hands him $500. And the employee slavishly celebrates the Bugsy. "I love the Bugsy gang. He gave me $500. It's literally the wagey mentality here in America. "Man, the Bugsy gang showed up and gave me $500. I love these guys. Man, they're awesome. I love this time of the year. This is the time of the year when the Bugsy gang gives me money for free. I love these guys." It never dawns on them. And it doesn't matter that on the envelope, the employer wrote, "I paid you $500, but $100 went to the Bugsy gang." They don't care. I have a hard time with, because people are so breathtakingly stupid. I don't mean that in an ugly way, but I mean, it's just the reality. The shopkeeper writes on there, "I paid you $500, but the Bugsy gang took $100. Here's your $400. And they don't care. They're still jumping up and down. "I can't wait. The Bugsy gang coming around. He's going to give me $500. I love the Bugsy gang. That's free money, bruh." They get a check stub. They see how much the government's taking out. Oh, once in a while, they'll grumble about it. But they still... they love it when they get that quote-unquote refund. It's awesome. They're giving me free money. It's free money. What are you going to do? You know, what are you going to do with people like that? You know, you wake them up. That's why I laugh about that. You will not hear me. There was a time when you would, but that's a long time ago. And people disagree with me, and that's fine. You don't have to agree with everything else. I don't give a shit about that. But you're not going to hear me talk anymore. You never hear me talk about waking people up. That is an endeavor that is pointless. People that have such a slave-like mentality that they celebrate the Bugsy gang giving them $500 every year, and they think it's free money when it's written right there on the envelope that they've been taking that money every week. You know, you're not going to wake up people that damn stupid. I don't know how else to put it. That's just the blunt way to put it. And I mean, again, that's just how it is. You know, and I understand the Bible refers to people as sheep for a reason. I get that. But it's something for me that's personally just extremely frustrating. I think it's a waste of time. You don't wake people up. They're sheep. They celebrate. The government takes this money from them this year and they throw a few back to them and they celebrate it as free money, as a refund. I love tax time. I love it. This is the time of the year. You have many working poor people who will say this is the one time of the year, this is that time of the year they're going to have more money in their bank account than any other time of the year. Because they get a portion of their little portion. They don't stop and think, wow, I would be less poor if they weren't taking all of this money from me. No. They love their captivity. They love their servitude. You know, it's a fool's errand to think you're going to wake people like that up. They woke up from what? They love it. Oh, they grumble about certain things. Mostly it comes down to they grumble if they think somebody else is getting something that they shouldn't. You know, people sit there and grumble about these deadbeats on the welfare, these people with their EBT. But if they're getting, they're mostly mad because they're not getting that. If the government said, well, we're going to give you some EBT too, then all of a sudden they wouldn't have a problem with it. You see? I don't know. Anyway, I don't want to get off on a whole nother thing with all that, but I do think it's a fool's errand to think you're going to quote unquote wake people up. They don't want to be woke up. They like it. Now, like I say, they grumble about things they don't like. But at the end of the day, they love their servitude. You know, they do. They love their servitude. Well, and I'm speaking broadly, the ones that love February 2nd, because they're going to get their refund, they love it. Because they don't view their servitude as servitude. The people that have to write the check on April 15th, that's a whole nother story. That's why they take it out a little at a time. Imagine if all these wages had to write a check on April 15th. All of a sudden, then they wouldn't love it, would they? They wouldn't be in love. Wouldn't be in love with the Bugsy gang. But anyway, enjoy your American Servitude Day. The rest of it. You're going to get a lot more. You know what you're going to get? You're not going to get much out of that check you have to write and send to the government. You're going to get much out of that because you're not getting any USAID money or any of that. But you are going to get something else. You're going to get the Christian-specific segment. I got something for you. It's more than you're going to get from the government. You're going to get a Christian-specific segment. So let's keep rolling with it. Look forward to it. Look forward to it more than paying the Bugsy gang. Get in there, fill those pews. Let's look forward. Let's get into this week's sermon at the Parish of the Patriots. You know, I've often said that I believe that we can learn about the world to come, the eternal, the kingdom of God, from the creation that God made. You think about when you make something, you're going to have a reference point. If you were going to go, for instance, if you were going to go build a house, or you decide you were going to build you like a hot rod kit car, you're going to build a hot rod kit car. Well, you're not starting with the concept of, well, it needs to roll on something. I'd better invent a wheel. Well, you know what a wheel looks like. You have a reference point. You're just designing lines, what the body panels would look like, what kind of engine you want to put on. But you're starting with a reference point of things you're already familiar with. And I believe that when the Lord created this existence that we live in, this plane of existence that we live in, I mean, he used the reference points of the kingdom, of the eternal. And that's why I believe we can find reflections of this. We can come to understand things of the kingdom of God and our purpose here and whatnot in the way these things are reflected. We can find things about the kingdom of God. I'll put it a better way. We find things about the kingdom of God in the creation, the way things work here. One of the things I'm most fond of as far as these reflections is the birth of a new child. We look towards the rebirth, being born into the kingdom of God. And, well, what does a birth of a child look like? The child is conceived, it is born, and it is formed in the womb. And then, after roughly 9 months, it is birthed rather violently, when you think about the process, it's birthed rather violently into this world. And then a new man is born and goes through life in this world, growing and learning and forming in who they are. You see, I really believe this life amounts to we are in the womb for the eternal realm. We are being formed in the womb. Now, of course, we think about our process we go through of growing and spiritually reflecting and try to coming come to understand God. But I thought we'd delve into this a little closer as far as doing, you know, looking at what it means, you know, looking at how a baby is formed in the womb and how that's reflected in the reality of how people are formed. You see, while we're in this life, we are truly becoming who we are. When a baby is formed in the womb, they don't change who they are. I mean, yes, once they're birthed into this world, then they start learning and growing. But their hair color doesn't change. Their sex doesn't change. Their, you know, eye color doesn't change. You know, the color, they don't, there are certain fundamental aspects of who a person is when they're born, when they're formed in the womb, before they're born, I should say, when they're formed in the womb, that even after being born, that is not going to change. It becomes fundamentally who they are. And I think this is reflective of us, of people, of men, as they go through life. We're forming who we are. Now, the difference is we do have control. We have free will. So we have a role to play in how form. We're not just going along with the flow. We shouldn't be. Many people sadly are. But we're not just going along with the flow. We're growing. We're learning. We should be growing, learning, referring, and trying to become what we could potentially be. We have a say in it, in other words. A baby in the womb does not have a say in it. But nevertheless, as a baby in the womb, we are being formed continually. This process applies, obviously, whether you believe in it or not. So if you're a smocker or a mocker or a scoffer, an atheist spurg of some sort, it doesn't matter that you don't believe this. This is taking place, whether you believe in it or not. Also, it's always relevant to take caution in the warning that Jesus Christ gave when he said that in that day, many people will not be in. They will not make it in. They'll be beating on the door going, but Lord, Lord, we preached about you in the streets. And he's going to say, I don't even know who you are. In other words, they never knew who Jesus was. He doesn't know who they are. I think it's always important to keep that warning in mind as we go through, you know, as we go through this process. Now, we know that as we go through this life, what Jesus has done for us is given us the opportunity to go through the process of judgment all throughout this life. I truly believe that this gets down to the fundamental nature of what Jesus accomplished. His final words on the cross was, "It is done." Well, what was done? You know, everybody says, oh, well, he just means he's done. He's done being sacrificed on the cross, and there that may be so. But perhaps this is a reference to the bigger plan is done. The accomplishment of what God set out to do when he undertook this project from the beginning. When he started creating this realm, when he created Adam, when he created the first man and set all of these things in motion. When Jesus said, "It is done," he had completed that. Now everything is set in place. The process is set in place. Jesus Christ gives us the opportunity to live under grace, which gives us the opportunity to go through the process of judgment. Most Christians have a fundamental misunderstanding of what judgment means. They picture a courtroom and God is trying to convict you and Jesus is your defense attorney. That's not. I honestly believe nothing could be further from the truth of that. You know, worse yet, they picture it like the British court system. That'd be why would that be worse? Well, because then Jesus and you know, then the Lord, everybody in the courtroom, you got to wear one of them white wigs, and you'd be, what is that? You misunderstand. You know, like you go through a courtroom session, and you know, like. Everybody's going through every detail on your life. The prosecutor is there. You know, on December 14th, 1997, Your Honor, you know, the defendant looked lustfully upon the woman working the checkout counter at the grocery store, something, some ridiculous nonsense like this. And we can laugh about this, but suddenly that really boils down, that really boils down a lot to the way people, the simplistic view people have of what judgment amounts to. I believe judgment means being honestly 100% confronted with the reality, with the truth, standing before the truth as reflected yourself, and having to come to terms with that. This is probably in reality much harsher than the silly courtroom drama that people imagine playing out. Imagine having to suddenly see the reality of who you are. You know, and this is worse if you consider yourself a righteous person. Again, we reference back to Jesus' warning about people beating on the door, not being, and Jesus is like, I don't even know who you are. Imagine going through your life, proclaiming yourself to be a Christian, thinking you know the Lord, and then when you face judgment, when you face the reality, when the truth is shined down upon you, having to know that you never understood him at all, that you never even got some of the basic things right, that you were just going through the motions. We are under grace in Christ Jesus, means we have the opportunity to constantly be looking at the truth, seeking that truth about ourselves. And I do believe it's important to look at the truth around the world, because this gets your mind centered on the truth. But our ultimate goal, really, because everything in this world is temporary anyway, our ultimate goal is to be looking at ourselves through the lens of truth, in the light of truth, coming to terms with who we really are, good, bad, and ugly. And that's a hard thing to do. It's a very difficult process, but we go through this process. This is why we're under grace. This is why when we do leave this world, we're prepared. We bypass that because we've already done it. It's not that the process doesn't apply to us, that we're somehow exempt. This is something else I think people misunderstand. They believe that to come under grace in Jesus Christ means that you're exempt from judgment. That means that now that you've said these words about accepting Jesus, then you've got your ticket stamped to go to the kingdom of God. You're good to go. No, you're not exempt from judgment. You're going through it your entire life. You're basically always looking at yourself. How can I improve? Because what am I doing? I think it's interesting that the Greek term for sin is to miss the mark. It implies like if you're shooting an arrow and you miss the mark. You're looking and seeing constantly how you're missing the mark. And probably more importantly, why you're missing the mark. Why you're choosing to do that. Grappling with the reality that at the end of the day, nobody's making you sin. Yes, there's temptations. Yes, the devil will lie to you or whatever, but you always have your free will and you keep making these decisions to sin in areas of your life. And you're constantly going through and looking at that and facing that reality. Being saved through Jesus Christ doesn't mean you're exempt from judgment. It means you're going through the process over the course of your entire life. Is this difficult? Is this a challenge? Well, yes, it is. Is it better than going through it all at once when it's too late? And here's the key thing. When it's too late to do anything about it. The wonderful thing about being under grace in Jesus Christ and going through all of this effort, and it's tiring. Anybody who's a Christian believer who's truly going through this process, who has, oh, it's a total joy. No, it'll wear you out. Constantly going through this process and trying to break down and see yourself for who you are, why you make decisions, and trying to become closer to the Lord, it will wear you out. It's tiring. It's exhausting sometimes. But it's totally better than going through it all at once, because as we go through this process, you can change. You can and you will change. You can do something about it. The person who just goes through life, doesn't do any of that, and faces judgment and goes through this process all at once, not only are you looking at this light of truth, seeing yourself for what you really are, who you really are, without any of your BS excuses and all these fake narratives you told yourself to justify who you are, seeing yourself for absolutely who you are all at once, Not only is that difficult, but imagine the fact of having to do that and knowing there's nothing you can do to change it. You see all of your confronted with all of the mistakes of your past, all the mistakes that you've made, all of the errors, how wrong you really were. Think about when Jesus talked about people who were beating on the door, going, "But Lord, Lord, we preached your name in the streets." Realizing how wrong you were, how much you missed the mark, and there's nothing you can do about it. You can't go back and redo it. You don't get a do-over. Now, you're faced with this reality, and you can't do anything about it. So not only do you have despair, you have like hopelessness in a sense because you can't change. You can't undo it. You realize that you had whatever time you had on earth and you squandered it. It's gone. And now there's nothing you can do to undo that by going through this process as we do as believers. You see, we're going through the whole seeing ourselves for who we are process. This is what we strive to do. It's an ongoing thing. But one of the blessed things about this is not only have we spread it out instead of going through it all at once, which is going to make it easier, but we can do something about it. When you do finally wrap your mind around your decision making, the reasons for it, why you do the things you do, why you're missing the mark, you still have time to take corrective action. You still have the opportunity to turn it around. You have the opportunity to correct this area of your life. And when you do, that brings you another notch closer to being more like Jesus Christ. You can do something about it instead of facing it all and knowing that in a way it's I don't want to say pointless, but it's in vain. You can't do anything to change it. You just have to see it for what it is, along with the fact that you missed that opportunity. Now, I was saying that if we look how a baby is formed in the womb, the essentials, the fundamentals of who a person is that's formed in the womb doesn't change. That doesn't change. You can go dye your hair a different color. But it doesn't change the fact that you're born with the hair color you have. The old joke, you know, them roots ain't dead, honey. You know, they're, you're going to see. You dye your hair blonde all you want, but if you have brown hair, the roots are going to give you away. Why? Because that's who you are. The fundamentals of how you're formed in the womb. What you're formed as in life. You think about those. Now, remember, Jesus himself warned that he didn't do it. This is another basic point that so many Christians don't understand. I see this one, and I don't say this from a standpoint trying to sound arrogant, like I know it all or something, because believe me, that's not the way I feel it. I look at it from how can somebody, I understand regular people because I didn't always get these things either. I had to learn and grow and work, and we had these discussions here. I try to share some of these viewpoints and for you to consider and decide. But how does somebody become an acclaimed preacher, an acclaimed teacher? I got a PhD at the seminary school, and yet they don't understand these things. They're just really, when you get to it, very basic. Jesus was very clear about it. Jesus very clearly stated, I have not come to remove a single letter from the law. Not a tittle. He said this plainly. I have not come to get rid of the law. And I can virtually guarantee you that most Christian believers out there, if you ask them, they think he did. They think the fact that we're not under the old covenant, we're not under the law. When they read in the New Testament from the apostles that we are no longer under the law, they think that means the law doesn't exist. No, we Reread that again, folks. We are, when the apostles said that, they said what? They said, we are no longer under the law. And they didn't say the law no longer exists. They said, we are no longer under the law. The law still exists. It has to exist because the fundamental nature, they're reflective of the fundamental nature of God. Now understand, when we talk about the law, we're not talking about rules about what you can eat and you know, considering certain animals. Those are a different, we're talking about the law, capital the law. Think of it as the natural order of things, things that, you know, reflect the fundamental nature of God, you know. The natural order of things. The law. What is it that is sinful? What is it that is not? Jesus obviously isn't going to overturn that. We are no longer under the law. Why? Because we are under grace. We are going through the process of judgment throughout here. And Jesus has given us the ability to be able to work through that without, you know, well, that's it. I sinned. I screwed up. Now I'm going, you know, I'm done for. Because why are we not done for? Because we have the opportunity to repent and to do better. You see, and you can understand how, well, this makes sense of why did God create man in the first place? He didn't just create men so we could throw them into hell. That doesn't make any sense. Why would he do that? The law exists for those who aren't. In other words, for those who are going to go through the process all at once, because they squandered their time here, they were not under grace, they did not come to know Jesus Christ, they did not go through judgment while they were going through this life, now they've got to go through it all at once. They've got to go through it knowing there's nothing they can do to change it. Now it is what it is. They squandered their time and they're under the law. Because there has to be a metric. There has to be a metric by which, you know, how are you, in other words, how are you to say that you missed the mark? Well, there has to be a target, right? There has to be something to show whether, you know, where you did land. The law is that metric. The law continues to exist because there has to be a fair metric by which people are judged that are not under grace, that have not already gone through the process. Again, and I'm not quoting out of the Bible. I don't want to stop the flow here and do that. But you know, when is written in the New Testament about describing how the law came up short, you know, how the law just basically shows us what is sinful, gives us a basic outline of what is sinful, you know, it doesn't do anything about it. You know, it's just a metric. You know, Jesus provides the opportunity. Okay, well, now we can do something about it. Now we can actually become closer to him. We can make corrective actions. We can go through the process. The law, though, continues to exist. It has to. Because how else are you going to judge these people who aren't under grace, who are not under Jesus Christ? I always say it's important to remember, you know, that God is just. Christian believers will blather on forever about how God is love, but God is also just. He is fair. Not a single man on this earth will be treated unfairly. Those who are not of the children of God, those who are children of the devil, will be sent back to their father because that's where they belong. They came from the devil. And they wind up in this world amongst us, the skinwalkers, whatever you want to call them. And they're going to go back to their father. What else would you do with someone like that? You send them back to where they came from. You send them back. They've got to go back. They've got to go back where they came from. They're going back to their father. It wouldn't be just to separate them from their father permanently. You send them back. You go send them for a family reunion with their daddy, the devil. That's where they belong. That's the just thing to do. A man who didn't, you know, who squandered the opportunity to be under grace is judged fairly. The metric is there. God, you know, it's fair. He treats everybody fairly. Nobody is treated unfairly. Nobody is treated unjustly. And we talk about things like this, and we imagine them, you know, and it is. And a lot of people picture those who went through their life mocking, scorning, telling people who were going through this process they were wasting their time. Why would you want to do that? They don't understand. Look, the worldly are never going to get why you're doing what you're doing. From their viewpoint, you're putting all of this effort for something that you're not. How can you even be sure? You're going off of some old book that somebody wrote? How can you be sure? You're just wasting your time. They're never going to understand, because in their viewpoint, you're wasting your time. You're putting all this effort in for something that you can't grab with your hands, that you can't taste with your mouth, you can't hear with your ears, you can't see with your eyes. Why, you could just be going and doing all of this wonderful sin. You see, they're not going to ever, they don't even understand the concept that the closer you become to the Lord, the closer you become to Jesus Christ, the more you, going through this process, have come to understand that sin, there's nothing fun about it. It can be momentarily pleasurable, but the closer to Christ you get, the more you realize it's all a lie. It doesn't bring happiness. Go find any example of somebody who's living in sin, and the more they're living in sin, I can 100% guarantee you, regardless of what face they put on, they're miserable. Okay, you don't wind up doing a bunch of hardcore drugs because you're having such a good time. They may tell you they're partying hard, but trust me, it's because they're medicating themselves because they're miserable. They bought into the fundamental lie that sin is a great time. Sin is mean living your life to the fullest, when the reality, it means living your life in vanity, in pointlessness, going from one day to the next without any purpose in life. You see, the unbeliever is going to always look at you and not be able to comprehend that you're not doing something. You're going, yes, this is a lot of work. Yes, I talked about earlier that it'll wear you out. It's tiring because it's an ongoing process. But they're never going to understand that one of the reasons you're going through it is you've come to understand that those things that they equate with living life to the fullest is just the opposite. You want to talk about wear you out? You just live in sin all the time. You know, and many believers at one point in time, very much we lived in sin. And we have that perspective. We know. You know, at the time you might have thought it was a good time. Now you don't. Why? Because you realize that it was pointless. It was just the absolute waste of time. Vanity, if you would. Anyway, kind of getting back on point. I keep wandering off the reservation a little bit here. We often picture like one of these people who's not under grace, and now they face judgment all at once. And you imagine that these people be like, oh, well, if I would have just known. If somebody would have told me. It's not fair. You see, I don't necessarily believe that. I mean, I'm sure some might have that reaction. But see, this would be a continuation of trying to justify. And all of that is taken away. You're seeing the truth for what it is. This is the torment of it. I don't believe hell is just a simple matter of you go someplace really hot and now you're just going to be miserable. It's the torment of trying to go back and say, well, it's not my fault, but you can't do that because the truth is literally in your face. It would be like sticking your hand in a flame and going, it's not hot. It can change the fact that, man, that burns. You can no longer go and hide behind your justifications. You see, we're formed who we are like a baby formed in the womb. In other words, somebody who has gone through their life and now their life is over, That is literally who they are. Don't think that once they stand before truth, once they stand before God, that suddenly they're not going to be who they are. They're not going to be continuing to be a mocker or a scoffer. That's who they are. That's how they spent their lives developing. This goes back to what we started with today. As a baby is formed in the womb, this is who you're becoming. If you go through the process under grace, you become more Christ-like. So what? You're ready for the kingdom. You're ready for to be birthed into the next life, which also, just as a baby being born, is a somewhat violent process. Death from this world can be a violent process. Nobody's looking forward to dying. Scary stuff. You are going to be born, and you're either more Christ-like, or you've spent your time doing something else, becoming something else. I don't believe there's any reason, there's no reason to believe that somebody who spent their entire life becoming a mocker and a scoffer and a fool is going to stand before God and suddenly go, I see the light. I mean, yeah, they're not going to be able to deny the truth that's standing in front of them. But who they are is not going to change. They'll still be a mocker and a scoffer because that's who they are. That's what they formed and became in the womb. The difference between a baby in the womb don't get a say what they're going to look like. But you do. Everybody has the opportunity in this life to have a say of what they're going to look like at the end of it. What the finished product, what kind of child is going to be birthed? A mocker and a scoffer? Oh, he'll be confronted with the truth. You know, he'll be confronted with the truth of what he is. But will he be able to acknowledge his error? I mean, he'll see it, but he won't be able. He won't be able to truly acknowledge the error. He'll still go back on, because that's who he is. Even when confronted with the truth. Because this is who they are. This is how they were formed in the womb of this life. They spent it becoming this. And that's not going to change. As hard as that can be to believe, even when they're faced with the truth, even when they're faced with the reality of who and what they are, because they can't change it. This is how they were formed. Okay. Anyway, we're going to wrap up on that note. I hope you got something out of it. I hope you enjoyed today's show. As always, I truly hope you got something out of our Christian-specific discussion. It's the best part, in my opinion. I don't care what anybody else says. If I wasn't doing that, I wouldn't be doing any of that. I got other things. I do other things. So I do hope you got something out of the show, specifically the Christian-specific segment. I hope you enjoy the rest of your week. And as always, of course, I hope to see you come back next week for the Parish of the Patriots.